Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man.
Castle.
There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso in a tower by the river, Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun, he sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
I've been a guest on conservative Dan Proft's WIND The Morning Answer radio show a number of times. He's funny, smart, acerbic, and now we get to return the favor on the Chicago way. But here's the thing about Dan, Politico, pundit, and former candidate for governor of Illinois. I've known him for years and respect the cut of his mind. But here's the thing, he hates talking about himself. I'll do my best to get under the Proftian chainmail so you can see the true Dan Proft, the one he never reveals, that kindly Uncle Dan you could picture in a Christmas story with a hot toddy in his hand, robe and slippers, telling stories to the children about the thrilling adventures of Edmund Burke. On with Proft is Tribune columnist and editorial board member Christian McQueary. She's a spiritual sister of the Chicago Way, and she knows how to get under Dan's skin. They join me and WGN producer Jeff Carlin today. And if everyone behaves, I just might take them to lunch. Proft and McQueary study Illinois politics, particularly Springfield. And it's a good time to have them on to talk about whether Illinois is at an economic tipping point. And after Donald Trump has shocked the Democrats and the establishment media, and as leftist pundits shriek their hysterical lamentations. In Illinois, we're going into another year without a state budget, as Democratic boss Madigan and his mini-me Johnny Cullerton continue their fight with Republican Bruce Rauner. I've said Illinois is broken. Prof said it's not broken as much as it's fixed. Either way, with Madigan pulling all the strings, a steady stream of taxpayers keep leaving the state, taking with them the tax revenue they once paid here and leaving the rest of us behind. So what does Dan Proft have to say about it? He's here on the Chicago Way.
Well, this is the cell of three that I've always envisioned.
Are we going to make out a building safely? I'm not sure if we should advertise our location at this moment.
By the fact that there are three conservatives meeting in the Tribune at once, will they come down, break the down the door, and bring us to room 101?
Does McQueary identify as a conservative?
A fiscal conservative.
That's a qualifier.
I would say if you read me, I'm pretty conservative.
Yeah. I mean, relatively speaking.
Like she just gave it to Joe Berrios. I'm sorry, the editorial board just gave Joe Berrios a loud smack in the mouth.
Already on the phone with his communications director this morning.
Tell us about it.
The Cook County assessor was ordered by the Supreme Court that he can no longer skirt investigations by the county inspector general, which he has been doing for 4 years. The ordinance was pretty clear that he was, falls under the jurisdiction, and the Supreme Court upheld that. And then turns out, interestingly, a couple other countywide elected officials have also been skirting the IG while waiting for the case to play out.
Dan Patlack,
the Cook County Board of Review, Maria Pappas, Karen Yarbrough, all had little investigations at different points that they thwarted during the past 4 years, saying, well, you know what, we're just going to use the same excuse that Joe Berrios has, that it's an unconstitutional interference into our...
Did Joe Berrios appear before the Tribune editorial board?
No.
Oh, because I was going to say that because there weren't enough seats for all his family members on the payroll. Is that why? So you
right.
had to do a phone call,
so
a conference call?
Let me get that's usually at the Erie Cafe.
Yeah, sure.
So let me get this straight, Dan Proft. Joe Berrios, minion of Mike Madigan, is his cover is taken away by the Supreme Court of Illinois, minions of Mike Madigan. Is that how it works?
Yeah.
But it happened this one time. But
they need some decisions to point to show their independence, to show, hey, look, we, call it right down the line based on the letter of the law. You know, that's how we do it here. So, Ann Burke and the boys and girls on the Supreme Court and, on down the line, they have to at least give the appearance that there's something resembling a representative Republican small R democracy in Illinois. So occasionally you get these one-off cases where they stumble into abiding the law, but it's a passing fancy, I trust.
Is Joe Berrios the fifth star on the flag that Ann Burke, wife of Justice Ann Burke, wife of Ed Burke, ally and property tax reducer himself, Ed Burke,
now,
and ally of Madigan, judge picker, Ed Burke.
Well, I understand that Justice Ann Burke Ubers Berrios to work in her Rolls Royce. That's what I understand.
I thought it was a rickshaw.
It's a Jaguar. It's a Jaguar.
No, I've been behind it. She's got a Rolls.
She does?
She's got a Bentley because it's got the Supreme Court number one plate on it.
Nice.
Yeah. Nice. At 59, from the 59th Street location? Comes all the way out?
Well, sure. I mean, the street, how many times do you think the streets got plowed yesterday on Ed Burke's block? 10? 12? So the Rolls can just,
that story, well, yeah.
Can just well, sure. escape, I mean, come and go from their compound.
You have to create work for his phalanx of bodyguards.
And behind the glass, I can see Jeff Carlin smiling wistfully, remembering days of long ago. Another place where we would sit and talk, the three of us.
This is a nicer studio.
What?
Mm-hmm. No, definitely nicer studio.
I remember that. It was John. It was Edward Doliak, Ty Wansley. Those days.
Oh, that is you know, speaking of that, I never understood it. The top rated afternoon radio show, Edward Doliak and Ty Wansley. Edward Doliak walks away. I always wondered, did someone ask him to go to, like, let's meet in Chinatown for spaghetti dinner at midnight?
No, I mean,
told him that
he wanted to focus on the tobacco cases.
He got nabbed for the second time, so.
Yes. Is he really a two-time loser, then?
Not yet. He will be.
I mean, he has a second indictment, right? I think, right?
Mm-hmm.
Once in 2007, I think he served a couple years. This is tax evasion. I don't remember. Was the first case tax evasion as well?
No, shaking down. Well, I mean, it was extortion.
Stuart Levin.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh, sure.
But remember the first case, Judge Marvin Aspin, was it? Who was it? Who slapped him on the wrist and said, no problem, go home.
Oh, right. And then, yeah.
And then they had to retry.
Yeah, then Patrick Fitzgerald didn't settle for that, which was good of him. But now the good news for Verdoliak, if this all works out, is if Jesse Jackson Jr.'s plea to President Obama to blanket grant executive clemency to everybody who's ever been convicted of a crime, hope maybe that would include Verdoliak, but he's just been charged. But perhaps Hillary hasn't been charged. Junior could fold him in.
She could be one of those.
But I mean, the point is, under the
Emancipation Proclamation three,
yeah,
or whatever.
Clearly it is. So.
Wait, okay.
That would cover a lot
okay,
of people.
Okay, so Jesse Jackson Jr. wrote this rambling Facebook post the other day. We had it in the paper. Others had it. He sounded like a madman, but he was pleading to President Obama to do an Emancipation Proclamation.
Right, for convicted criminals, not for individuals who were subjugated by the state under a racist regime like slavery.
By the Democrats under Andrew Jackson.
Yeah, I mean,
I just thought I'd mention the
comparison to slavery would generate outrage if it was...
If you said it.
If I said it.
Yeah.
But Jesse Jackson Jr. saying it somehow and using alliteration around it, somehow it makes it okay. It's not okay, but it would be fascinating. All the convicted criminal politicians in Chicago and Illinois could come back and rerun for office. And so then, you know, we wouldn't have to worry about competitive elections. And, you know, Mel Reynolds could run again and Jacksons, everybody.
I mean, what was his motivation? Because he's not going to be clipped in, you know, he will land as a lobbyist. He will.
Who, Junior?
Yeah. I mean, this
Junior's still getting what, 80 grand for a year in pension?
Yeah, but I mean, to think about the mental health costs he has.
And the cigar bill.
I mean, was he calling
I'm sure those are Nicaraguans. Yeah.
Was he calling for, how widespread was he?
I think he wanted everyone, right, Jeff?
Time served.
Just laughing.
Everybody. And he conceded that it would include him. He didn't mention Sandy, but it would include them as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you think he's seen the new Star Wars movie yet?
There you go. Okay. So Danny Michalopoulos, I think, or somebody went to his house and spotted a collection of Star Wars memorabilia.
His Chicago house or his D.C. house?
His Chicago house. Chicago. And he has walls and walls of Star Wars toys that have never been out of the box.
Well, that's
And then he went and bought the stuffed Elk Heads.
I think Dan Proft has that same collection, don't you?
Yeah, I have all the figurines.
All the Ken Barbies, you've kept them in their package.
I also have the uniforms when I go to the premiere of the next installation of the Star Wars series so that I can dress up like Luke Skywalker or Darth Vader or whoever I feel like, Princess Leia.
I've suggested
whoever I feel like to give in the movie.
I've suggested Rom and the 50 city council members go as Ewoks.
Yeah.
They would look like little tiny furry beasts with little rubber-tipped spears.
The Ewoks were endearing, though. That's the difference.
They were fuzzy.
They were good guys.
You wanted the George Lucas Museum, didn't you, Dan, for this reason? Because you're kind of a Star Wars nerd, and you thought it would be a great addition.
There we go.
Look, I'm fine, as a maven of culture in the city, which is my reputation. Sure, I want additions to the arts and culture scene here, but not a taxpayer, not at with land grabs, the way that Tiny Dancer
it should just remain a chunk of asphalt so that Bear fans can put their grills on it. That's what it is. That's what it should be. I hope you're happy.
Why?
That millions of dollars, I'm just channeling Rom because I probably have lunch with him soon again, and he always goes to. I hope you're happy.
Yeah.
That we lost millions of dollars.
I am happy that we're not that George Lucas is not paying a dollar a year for precious, some of the most precious lakefront property in the world. So I am happy that he is building elsewhere.
And the fact that they had their little wedding at the point where I was when I was a kid, that's where we used to go to the
point to
get married.
They got married.
Well, I know, but when you went as a kid, just to swim. I thought you meant
it was
like
you took
your girlfriend there.
He was a wedding crasher. He went there at the wedding.
No, when I was a little kid, we'd go to the point.
Okay, to swim and play.
To play with, and our family would go for our big ethnic picnic.
The caravan of cars dropping off.
Caravan of cars, Greeks, and there'd be two professors from the U of C around a tree, and we would just ring them.
Really?
And the ring would get smother them, and finally they'd run out.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea that he wouldn't let, that there was a mom with her kid, and the kid wanted to go to the washroom, and the mommy couldn't go, the kid couldn't go to the washroom because they were having their wedding.
They closed it down
to
the public.
That's when they got pissed
off. They paid for it. That was one difference. We wrote an editorial at the time saying, if this is such a great wedding spot, scale it, charge people, and then you can close it down. But that was probably our way of being too nice. They did repaint, they had to repaint the entryway and fix
really
up the
good
bathrooms.
But they're done, and they're gone.
And George Lucas and Melanie did pay for that use of that.
Well, I mean, so what you could do now there in that spot is you could make it like an annex facility of the Obama Presidential Library, make it like the Tony Resco wedding chapel or the Tony Resco banquet hall specifically for weddings.
And at the Obama Library, they should sell Resco roots. You know what those are? Those are little plugs of grass from the $600,000 lot that he bought for Michelle.
Yeah, I mean,
For Senator Michelle Obama.
Well, that's the nice thing is if now that space is available, that's unencumbered by the Lucas Museum, we can honor other city fathers like a Tony Resco or a Rod Blagojevich.
City fathers.
Yeah. What about that?
It's about Gilbert.
Yeah, I mean, don't we want to enshrine our great philosopher kings that have lorded over Chicago and Illinois, don't we?
How about a bust of John Cass?
That'd be fantastic.
No, just me posing in the thinker with a gigantic fig leaf. No problem there, babe.
All
right?
No.
Whatever that ridiculous person is now president of the United States said.
Can either of you do a broadcast or a podcast without referencing
a codpiece?
Your male parts.
Oh.
The codpiece has always been a source of fashion fascination. What was it? The history of the codpiece is, of course, linked to the history of men, and in particular, the history of men in pants. It's really the story of a very small region of the world, since until relatively recently, nobody really wore pants.
The minstrel in the gallery looked down upon the smiling faces. He met the gazes of several spaces. Between the old men's cattle, he brewed a song of love and hatred. Oblique suggestions, and he waited. He polarized the pumpkin eaters, static humming battle beaters. Freshly day-glowed factory cheaters, salaried and collar scrubbing, he titillated men of action, belly warming and still rubbing on the parts they never mentioned. He pacify the nappy suffering. Infants bleating, one lion jokers, TV documentary makers, overfed and undertakers, Sunday paper, backgammon players, family scars and women haters. And he called the band down to the stage, and they looked at all the friends he made.
You know what? That's the center of what I wanted to get to. Okay.
Okay. Nice pivot. Let's hear it.
The real Dan Proft and the real Kristen. We talk about policy all the time, you and I, and politics. And Dan is of this sort of old school, kind of like a young Walter Pidgeon, in the sense that he doesn't talk about himself, only ideas. He has that wall up. Mm. We're going to break that wall down today, aren't we?
I'm like a modern.
On the Chicago.
I'm a 21st century Savonarola, preparing for my bonfire of the vanities when the opportunity arises, perhaps when John Cass is enshrined with his codpiece down in
You've
the
been
museum
preparing,
campus.
See, you have all the Dan Proft armor up already, doesn't he? He's kind of up there, right? It's all the force fields are up. The Dan Proft force fields
are you going to start doing like a Dr. Phil routine on me? Like the problems are like pancakes?
That's what this is feeling like. Yeah. I'm getting a little uncomfortable over here.
Yeah.
Jeff's going, no!
Oh, no, roll with it. This is great.
Is the first thing I have to do is get real, John?
I don't want to get real. I don't want to do a Dr. Phil. I want to do more like a Yanni, okay? Like a John therapy session here. But
Yanni.
Really, you know, I look
Mary,
at the...
married to Linda Evans?
That's another embarrassment of my race. She was like 70 years old, right?
She was better preserved than Nancy Pelosi in her 70s. I'll tell you that. Linda Evans. Come on.
Is she Nancy Pelosi. Are you speaking of her in the past tense?
No,
is
she's still alive.
Evans? Okay,
no, she's still alive.
And is Nancy Pelosi alive?
Yeah, really? She is alive. She was.
There's a formaldehyde version of her floating around.
Yeah, it was. It appeared on Face the Nation this weekend.
Where she said, we don't need to change. No one. The country does not want to change.
Stay the course. Yeah.
Okay, Kristen, take it away.
Do you want to break down walls here?
I don't want to break down. I don't want to do Dr. Phil, but I did read Dan's wiki because I'm a journalist.
What does his wiki say?
So I prepared.
That's where you get your leads.
I have a wiki, but my wiki sucks.
I don't have a wiki.
Mine sucks.
I'm
and
glad
all that,
I don't
like
have
the David Brocks
I could
of the
I could
world.
Change. I'll post a wiki.
No, please don't. I'll look up Dan's while we're talking.
Rule of wiki. Is it wrong for the person who is the wiki subject to actually write or shape?
No, you got
wrong.
You have
You're
to get in there.
Because otherwise,
to...
yeah,
I've
you,
never
you
done
leave
it
to your detractors.
Otherwise, Dan would still be hosting with Bruce Wolf.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow, it's the first thing that pops up.
What's
it's
that?
If you Google your name, it's your wiki.
Right.
People inquiring minds.
But there's nothing in there about the personal life of Dan.
Dan is an American business person, writer, and radio talk show host. He's a former Republican candidate for the governor in Illinois. He formerly hosted a random blah, blah, blah.
Double teaming. Awesome.
Early yeah. life. Oh, we have like an
Notice
early life
no
and a professional life.
In there.
But there's no personal life. No reference to your personal life.
I aspire to have a personal life someday. It's, you know, I mean, it's kind of the same thing as I said when I lost my race for governor, quoting my favorite poet, Robert Browning, that what I aspire to be and was not comforts me.
But you started.
So I aspire to be a three-dimensional human being right now, and I have not achieved that yet, but I'm working on it.
But you started your gubernatorial race with all the other people running for office talking about how poor they were, like Andy McKenna and other people.
Yeah.
Starting out really tough. Where you said the classic, I was born a poor black child.
No, there's nobody who likes a false Horatio Alger story from a politician more than me.
Give the setup of that, because it was at the ABC 7 debate, and everyone just started kind of rambling about their tough.
Well, yes,
beginnings.
That's right. But it was Charles Thomas who asked the questions, like essentially, how can you relate? Because you guys all live in ivory towers. And then,
unlike Charles Thomas with his 5,000 suits.
Well, right. I mean, you know, it's sartorial splendor, but so that was the question. And then Andy McKenna said, well, you know, I visit this entrepreneurial center my father financed or something once a quarter. And Kirk Dillard and Adam Andrzejewski started arguing about whether Kirk Dillard's house was worth $1 million or not. And then Kirk Dillard said, well, I had to have a garden apartment when I went to DePaul Law School in Lincoln Park. And that's no easy feat, you know.
You need the groove.
Having to stay in Saturday nights and study rather than going to Tilly's.
And to Paul.
Yeah. I mean,
the seminary for a
my gosh, I
patty
can't.
Melt.
You know Tilly's? Back, I don't even think Tilly's is around
no,
anymore.
No, it's gone. Okay. It's back in the day. And so, you know, so all of these sad sack stories, these tales of, oh, all these politicians have overcome, that's what prompted me to do my, you know, Steve Martin impersonation.
And how was that received? Because I laughed, but I didn't go to the debate.
Charles Thomas, who asked the questions, because I could see him and you couldn't see him on camera.
Yeah.
He was like, his head was down on the table where the panel was that was asking questions. And he was, his hand was slapping on the table. He was laughing hysterically. And then after, to his credit, he's a funny guy. I like Charles a lot. After the debate, he comes up and he goes, "My brother." So it was fun. It was, you know, one of a very few fun moments in that contest.
Yeah. How did that contest end?
That ended with me finishing a distance from the victor, Bill Brady, and us getting 4 more years of Pat Quinn. And how did that end for Illinois? Badly. And how's it been going since? Poorly.
It has been going. So Dan kind of not started it off and really helped cement Mike Madigan as the ultimate boss.
Is that so? It's Dan's fault?
It's kind of in a way, aww, right?
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
What are you crying about? Did you make pie yet? Have you made the pie for us? Another week without pie from Pie Bragger, my friend
Jeff. I was
sick
this week and you want a sick pie. Ugh. Dan's had my pie.
Is that a metaphor?
See, again.
Or are we talking about actual pie?
Cod pieces.
Oh.
Oh, my
no.
goodness.
No.
Somebody save me.
So Dan.
I'm responsible for Mike Madigan?
Well, I mean, I'm just saying that you kicked it off. You kept Mr. Quinn in office. You helped that, didn't you?
Oh, it's my fault that Quinn won re-election, too? Boy, I have a lot to apologize for. Yeah.
Had this debate in the editorial boardroom, though, as to...
You guys actually have debates?
Oh,
I thought everyone just yells at Kristen.
Well, that's things. In my mind, that's a debate.
Right.
To which I promptly slap them all down.
There you go.
But whether or not voters understand and will tolerate just 2 more years of what we've been doing, and if Democrats will then have a good case that Bruce Warner was able to get nothing done, and it's really looking that way.
You're whining. Okay, there's a person at this table, not me, another person. You're just whining. See, I know how you work now. Okay? You're just winding him up.
It was the other person.
But I heard him this one morning this week, I heard him on the radio, WIND, the Morning Answer, basically take the whole state apart, not only the politicians, but the voters, right?
Yeah.
Well, look,
I mean, own what you beget. And the whole idea, will voters tolerate another two years of what? The same thing they've been indulging for the past 30 years? Of course they will. I mean, I'm sorry, but the results from this state, and particularly in the suburbs, suburban Democrats in suburban Cook County and the Collar County said, we like what's happening. That's what they did when they voted for
because
the same
like
old state legislators.
Michelle Nussman, she's nice.
Nussman and Schomburg.
Whatever her name is. Dan Biss, Tribune likes
we them. Want to get rid of Leslie Munger. We want to get rid of an independent thinker with corporate credentials to actually do the job of comptroller.
And we
to put legislators in the queue with everybody else who was owed money and replace her with a Madigan flunky.
The future mayor of Chicago, Susanna Mendoza.
Oh, is that right?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I mean, at some point, you get the government you deserve. And suburban Democrats said this worst governed state in the nation, worst governed state in by some measures of any state in the nation in 2 generations. Fine. No problem. More of the same. This is what I like. So own it.
There are more, didn't you say some day this week, there are more political jobs and manufacturing jobs.
More government jobs and manufacturing jobs. The only state in the Midwest that that's true.
What does that mean?
Well, to your point earlier, I think I was listening at a point when you were talking about why we are such an outlier for other states in the Midwest that have, you know, some more balance. You know, why do we still have this really loyal Democratic base, even in the suburbs where you would expect a little bit more independent thinkers? And that's what, I mean, we have more government than anyone else. And so if you think about all the government jobs who are dependent on Cook County and Tody Preckwinkle, Rahm, if you're a lawyer, a contractor, you work for the state, you've got some sort of a job at Metro through Mike Madigan, and then all of the ancillary things that come with that, voters vote in their own self-interest. And so they will continue the status quo because we still have prevailing wage and we still have things that if you're a union worker, you believe that flipping control is going to possibly decimate your own finances, your own well-being. And so as long as we have all these people dependent on government jobs and the largesse that that produces, we will continue to have suburbs that are getting more and more Democratic.
And
yeah, I mean, I think that's, look, I think that's, there's a lot of truth to that. But the other thing I'd say to that is, okay, so when your pension funds are formally insolvent, that they cannot pay out current beneficiaries, police, fire, teachers, state workers, then, you know, don't come crying to me. Me and a whole host of other people have been warning you about the gathering storm for a decade plus, and you don't believe it, and you won't believe it until it comes to pass. Well, when it comes to pass and you're taking a haircut and your retirement isn't what you thought it was going to be, it isn't what you were promised it would be, then don't come crying to me, because we were on your side trying to save your pension and trying to turn this state around for all that time, and you voted against us.
It's really,
and you voted against yourself, effectively.
It's really insolvable. I mean, it's done. I mean, if you really look at it, it's over. Just flee right now. Like, who's the guy that writes the spy thrillers? Mm-hmm. Brad Thor. People like this. Gone. Everybody I know who can leave is leaving.
Yeah, that's right.
Right? And,
yeah.
And I think, does Rauner bear some responsibility?
I don't like all of the things that he has done, most definitely. But what bothers me when people make that argument, and they do it, my colleagues and people who I consider to be really well-read and thoughtful, mm-hmm. They still think the clock on all of this devastation started in January 2015.
Right.
They forget that there was overspending under the previous back-to-back Republican governors, that at one point Rod Blagojevich got shut out. At another point, Quinn was shut out. I mean, the bill backlog under Quinn, when you had three Democrats running state government, was still atrocious. And you had at one point Cullerton describing Governor Quinn as being irrelevant to the budget process. So they as long as those two are down there, it is, as far as I'm concerned, we're done.
You're right. The biggest canard that is advanced by those kind of defenders of the status quo who have no data to back up their defense, so they have to kind of conjure up this narrative.
Is what I just said?
Is what Kristen just said. This all started January of 2015.
Oh, yeah. Right.
This state is $250 billion in total debt, $250 billion in total debt. That was all piled up in the last 24 months? Really?
Right.
Do you believe that? Come on.
No.
The quality of our schools, the violent crime in Chicago, that's Governor Rauner's fault? That started 2 years ago and he's in charge of the city?
What is it about the public discourse that allows a boss like Mike Madigan and his henchmen that we haven't really highlighted, Steve Brown, and little water carriers like Barbara Flynn Curry and Johnny Cullerton, why is it that they are not, except for the Tribune editorial board, and not enough by me, I would say, but generally everyone else, I mean, not present company excepted, Dan, Madigan is seen as not the evil actor in this thing.
Well, his approval rating, for people who know him, is like, you know, 4 or 5 to 1 negative to positive.
Right.
So people who know him and understand his role, they understand generally he's the problem. What they don't do is connect the dots. Because it's very easy to just say, yeah, he's the problem. I'm a good government Democrat, so I agree Mike Madigan's got to go. But now all of his minions who do his bidding, somehow we disconnect those minions from him. That's a fundamental problem. Now, the other thing, just to be fair about it, of the three-pronged answer you get from the Steve Browns of the world and every other Democrat.
Who appeared on your program for a long time.
And this is his answer to every problem that afflicts Illinois. It's not as bad as you think. There's plenty of blame to go around. We're working on it. That's every answer. Every answer to every issue. Well, he's got one thing right. There's plenty of blame to go around. And the blame does persist with milquetoast Republicans who play Madigan's game, who just last week in veto session were doing their dance to his kabuki theater with all this get around the table nonsense. We're trying to work it out nonsense and this belief that, well, if you criticize Madigan, then he gets a little upset. And so we're going to try and appease him, because you know what you got to do with Madigan? You got to kill him with kindness. Then he's going to advance structural workers' comp reform and pension reform.
You
and
put your forehead to the floor.
I mean, come on.
Touch it.
We have Vichy Republicans who open with surrender. We still do that rhetorically in every other way. And if I'm going to be constructively critical of Bruce Rauner, he has had a lot of opportunities to foment that inflection point to seize a watershed moment. He has one at present, and that's with the labor impasse with respect to the contract with the states largest public sector.
Is he going to pull the? Okay, explain what that is, because the question is, does he pull the trigger and play Reagan 30, or not?
37,000 state workers that are members of AFSCME. There is a labor impasse as declared by the State Labor Relations Board. That means Rauner can impose his last best final offer, which includes a wage freeze, something he negotiated successfully with 18 other collective bargaining units, smaller groups of state workers represented by public sector unions. AFSCME wants 15 to 29% raises over the course of 4 years, in addition to all of the other bennies they get, which, I mean, are just astronomical compared to anything so that anybody in the private sector is receiving. He should impose. He should say, take it or walk. And right. If you walk, fine, we'll replace you. It should be a Reagan moment. It should be a Paco
ready.
Moment.
He should be ready.
He doesn't want to do it.
Is he ready?
I don't think he's ready. And I think this is going to drag out for at least another year. I think he has to build public sentiment a little bit more on his side.
What is
as
with
to what
his PR team? Okay,
they're not
I'm just
doing the greatest
you?
Job, right? I mean, I
guess what? I have not had a conversation with his PR team for 6 months.
Well,
I don't know if they're not that they have to come to me. Okay, not that I'm on the mount, but I do have a column that people read. I don't know if they've come to you, Dan, or you, Christian.
Oh, they're in my ear probably every day.
Right. Okay.
But they're not. But they're still not. They're not saying the right things. There are two things that have to happen if an AFSCME strike is going to be successful. And by successful, I mean taxpayers don't get screwed in the end because they cave. And one is you have to build up more of a case that they are asking for too much, that what they're asking for is far out of line with what the private sector provides and what the state can afford. And that's going to take a little bit of time. But also, there is this new push, you'll hear this from them all the time, that Rauner needs to return to the bargaining table. That is a load of crap. They have had 67 separate sessions where they have sat down with AFSCME's negotiating team. The bargaining unit is like 300 people. So you have 300 AFSCME members sitting in a room with a couple of Rauner's lawyers. And they have traded back
taped?
And forth. No.
By design, right?
I'm not sure what the confidentiality rules are.
I would love to see the
But they have traded back and forth between 200 and 300 different proposals. And AFSCME, their goal is to stall. They are not going to give on anything. And so the last place Rauner should be wasting any more time is at the bargaining table.
He should be standing up and bringing the fight on behalf of all these taxing districts in local school districts, the suburban districts that are going to get jammed. And he should be bringing the fight to them publicly.
He doesn't want to have
every
a,
day.
He doesn't. He is not inclined to have a fight. And it's a massive mistake, because if you look at the other Great Lakes states, Mitch Daniels, Scott Walker, Snyder in Michigan, Kasich in Ohio, they all precipitated the fights that had to be fought with various component parts of their political enemies.
Yeah. And allies.
And allies in some cases, no question. And that's the only way forward here. This is not a fight for its sake. It's a fight to present contrast, to consummate the promise you made to be that that tough business guy who's going to make the difficult decisions to turn this state around, which is his value proposition as a candidate. If we come around to 2018 and we're in 2018 is a rerun of 2016 with nothing accomplished in the interim and Illinois just continuing to list towards the precipice, then
why reelect him?
Well, unless he's got some compelling policy agenda on property taxes or a taxpayer bill of rights or something that frames a contrast, because the contrast is being lost. Every day that they don't communicate, the contrast is being lost. And they just don't seem to want to leverage the bully pulpit. They should be in permanent campaign mode. This is obvious. It's obvious to most people. It's obvious to people that have financed Rauner, and they don't do it.
Here's why I don't. I think he's serious, but I don't think he wants to fight. And let me tell you why. A couple of years ago, we had some beers, and I said, are you going to go after Joe Berrios? And he did.
To Rauner. You had beers with Rauner.
He didn't.
Well, John had his Zinfandel, Rauner.
It was a crisp Chardonnay.
It was a blush.
It was a blush. He didn't go after Joe Berrios. I don't think he could have made Joe Berrios a punching bag for Mike Madigan for taxes. He didn't do it. I didn't see him. I saw him spend money, but he wasn't active out there in this last election, was he?
Yeah, he was. And I think there was Dan would know more about this than I do, but I think there was a serious learning curve with his first probably 12 to 14 months in office as to what he thought he could jam through the legislature. And, he started out kind of befriending all the lawmakers and inviting them over for lunch
right.
and trying to build personal relationships. That doesn't matter.
They respond to fear.
That's great that you tried to build up these relationships, but they are not going to rise up against their leaders. And it was a waste of time.
And the Republicans. the Republicans in this state down here, it was the Tribune's Mike Kidwell, doesn't get enough credit for it, right? Established that most of the downtown real estate is represented by Mike Madigan, right? This downtown real estate is owned by pension funds, et cetera, et cetera. But many Republicans have their hands in this. So the Republicans in Illinois who count the owners of real estate and so forth are basically subsidizing Mike Madigan. Are they not?
Well,
so how,
there's a part of that, but money is no longer, at least at present, is not the issue. That's not why Republicans didn't make the gains that I think we could have made this past election cycle. We picked up 4 in the House and 2 in the Senate, but I thought we could have done better, and I thought we should have done better. But it wasn't a money issue. So, yeah, I mean, you've got rent-seeking corporate interests that are aligned with the Democrats. There's no question about that. But, you know, they don't control a whole host of votes. They have resources they can provide to whoever they want to provide them to. But those resources were equalized thanks to big commitments to his credit by Rahner and Ken Griffin and Dick Uihlein. Mm-hmm. But the latter two, Rahner too, contributed to the independent expenditure PAC that I operate that supports state legislative candidates. So there's something else going on besides resources, right? It's not resources. We don't have that crutch anymore. And that's why I think this needs to be a bit of a reflective period for the governor and for the Republican Party in general, because I don't see much policy progress in the offing in the next 2 years. Madigan and Cullerton have very little incentive to move on anything structural that the governor requires in order to consider revenue. And so if that's the case, then what do you do for the next 2 years leading into your reelect, which, of course, is all important because then it likely determines who controls the map in 2020.
Less than a year away right now we are from the next filing period for the next election cycle.
Yeah.
December 3rd or 4th, I think, is the filing date.
Yeah.
So we're in campaign mode. It's so sad and sickening that you keep thinking like after we get through an election, then they'll do something bold, then they'll work together. But if you're trying to advance a policy position also, it's just not going to happen. I've written a lot about what Bruce Rauner's agenda actually means, what it is. And I still, you know, he's not even talking about revolutionary reform. He's not talking about widespread right to work. He's not talking about stripping prevailing wage ordinance from local governments. But that's what they have not done a good job. And even though I've tried, voters don't care about the details. So I do think, to your point, Dan, there is this large constituent group that still thinks that he is a union buster. They have not taken the time to think at all about what the policies are that he's actually pushing now. And so maybe campaign mode is all that's left for him. I don't know.
No, it is. I mean,
that's voters' fault. I mean, I'm fed up with voters.
You sound like those liberals during the last presidential election.
Yeah, I
don't
do
be
a
like
little
that.
Bit, don't
Watch
I?
Watch that.
Well, I mean, it's not about, castigating them, except to say, this is what you voted for. So when you get it, I don't want to hear the...
Don't come crying to me.
How did this happen? Wait a second. I didn't vote for that. Yeah, I mean...
I would like to see Shirley Madigan sing that.
You would?
Yeah, that would be great.
But I mean, it's time that there's like, and this is not just people in media or politicians or party officials. This is like peer to peer. You know, the person that you live.
Your next door neighbor.
Your next door neighbor in Addison.
The one who gets home at 3 o'clock because he's got a government job.
Well, or
3:30. Sorry.
Or I don't know. I mean, or the one who gets home at 8 o'clock because they work themselves to the bones at a social service provider that is owed money by the state, and they say, "Yeah, there's this dang Rahner. Hold, wait a second. Right? That's where the reckoning needs to happen. Listen, you sophisticated barbarians that think you're so caring for your fellow man. I've said this on my show, and I will say it again. It is impossible to hold these two positions. You cannot hold the position that I care about my fellow man in Illinois, and also I'm going to support the Chicago Democrat power structure. Those two positions are mutually exclusive, and it's going to take more than some guy on the radio or some guy with a column or some woman with a column and an editorial board opinions in order to change people's minds. They're going to have to hear from their peers. They're going to have to hear from people with whom they have trust relationships.
And he has to simplify his message and make it clear that he's fighting for all. If he's just fighting against Madigan, it's two politicians.
Totally.
Right?
He's fallen right into that trap.
He's fallen into the trap. And I have to say, another thing I'm disappointed in the U.S. Justice Department, because I thought that they might open investigations here in Illinois and get some, that dragon, what is it called? Dragonstone?
Oh, yeah, the dragon, the glass, the dragon glass.
Well, once I saw Sheldon Silver of New York, the Speaker of the House there, and a big-time real estate guy, go away.
Overlapping interests.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's called theft of service or whatever Big Jim Thompson called it once when he put Anton Walker away. I thought there would be a parallel investigation.
As Anton Walker and Dan Walker, are they the same?
Did I say Antoine Walker?
Yeah, I mean.
Isn't he a basketball player?
Yeah, he was from Chicago.
I didn't even mean Walker. I meant, who did I mean?
You mean Otto Kerner.
Yeah, Otto Kerner.
Yeah.
Yeah, just forgetting.
The man who brought down Tucker Autos, that jerk.
Tucker Autos.
Yeah.
Check. Where have you been for the last 40 minutes?
Wait, who is that?
Learning.
Is that
Jeff Carlin?
I'm learning.
No, I know that, but wait, who played?
Preston Tucker. Oh, yeah, Jeff Bridges.
Jeff Bridges, right, played in the movie? Yeah.
Played in a great movie, Hell or High Water. Have you seen it?
Excellent.
Just because he often likes to eat liberals for breakfast and then grind their bones to make his bread, there is another side to Dan Proft, the softer side, the kinder, gentler side. At least I think so. I think it's there. And as he sits there, I'm almost thinking about asking Dan what kind of tree he'd be, if he were in fact a tree, or better yet, what's his spirit animal? But then I think, do you really want to go there?
Can we just, in the few minutes that remain, can we get to the happy holidays?
Oh, yeah.
What's the, Dan, since you don't ever talk about your personal life, do you come in contact with children during the holidays?
That is an odd way to phrase that question. I feel like I need council president to answer that. I have two nephews, right? A 9-year-old and a 5-year-old nephew.
What does Uncle Dan get for Christmas? Yeah. Like, what do you?
He passes out cash envelopes.
Cash envelopes and firearms.
Personal constitutions.
Right. What's right?
Saying, give them all flat tires?
No. And then we
give them all flat tires.
We don our powdered wigs and we do the second Continental Congress for the adults.
I know.
What's wrong with that?
Won't
That's the holidays.
Personal questions.
So
I no longer try.
I get there's this site called Fat Brain Toys, and I get them toys from Fat Brain Toys, and I'm now that especially the 9-year-olds.
What is it, like smart toys for smart kids?
Yeah, and then like
what about like.
Or kids that you want to grow up to be smart kids.
What about like Nintendo games or not Nintendo? What is it called?
Call of Duty.
Better. Division, where you slaughter people that have gone mad in New York.
Yeah, I want to get them like Grand Theft Auto so they can learn about being a pimper and prostitute.
Yeah.
No, I don't think so.
They can choose not to be.
That's true.
It's like
we should expose
choice.
Them to everything.
Right.
Then let them make their choice.
They could be the good criminal.
That would not go over well at St. Irene's where they matriculate in scenic downtown Warrenville. I do Uncle Dan stuff.
What's the nickname they have for you?
Yeah.
Mr. Proft.
Like I'm at Pinewood Studios looking at some sort of a movie made in 1937. I can imagine Dan is the Dickensian uncle in a play.
Yeah.
Right?
I am.
Black and white.
I am
he allows them
from...
to remove his top hat when he comes
That's
in
it.
The door, and they remove his coat.
His overcoat.
Merry Christmas, everyone.
He says, fetch me a brandy.
Yeah. And... We watch It's a Wonderful Life together, and I explain to them how Mr. Potter's the hero.
Did you also tell them that Capper was a commie and a cynic?
No, I didn't. Okay. We haven't gotten to the Hollywood blacklisting yet. We'll get to that. Maybe when they're 10 and 6.
So that is Dan. He doesn't want to talk about anything.
I just laid my soul bare.
I could just imagine Dan, like, you know, reading stories, you know, Christmas stories around the fire.
Yeah,
he does. He just doesn't reveal it. He doesn't want to talk about it.
My wingback chair next to the fireplace. You know, gathered
blowing cigar smoke in the 6-year-old's face.
Exactly.
Yeah.
My good man.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, it's more.
More horseradish on that beef.
It's more adult oriented.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. We're in our matching ascots.
Dan, what's your favorite Christmas memory of yours? Something good.
And not the coal, not the lump of coal that you were given.
Well, that was
as a
most
child.
Christmases. Yeah. So that wouldn't be a singular memory. Boy, I'll have to think about that. I don't know.
He's looking for teases now. He wants to tease.
In case you're new to radio. Yeah.
You know?
No, I don't. I don't
but where? Really,
a special Christmas memory.
Yeah, something like where you opened the present and there was a little doggy inside, like a little puppy or something, or a cat.
Mommy, why isn't the puppy breathing?
Holes in the box.
Why is the puppy cold? Stiff.
Can we eat it now?
Yeah, right. It's just stuffed in. Well, sure. Dog meat, like the president.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. Well, see how I see?
There
he
goes.
Hey.
There he goes.
Full circle.
No, I don't know. I mean, yeah.
No, no.
I don't know. I can't. There's nothing
you
that.
Never got a bike. You never got a bike.
I don't want to tell it. I don't want to tell like a Christmas memory that just falls flat.
Just
like,
make one up. Damn it.
Big deal.
make a bleep and lie about it. Just say when the red flyer, whatever those things are, one of those stupid sleds with the runners that
radio
cut
flyer.
They cut your fingers off. Right. Yeah. Something
yeah.
like that.
Yeah.
That moms don't allow. They want the discs instead, right?
Well, those are dangerous. Now it's all just plastic.
Disc, right? Those are dangerous too?
Well,
no, the drones now. That's the thing. That's the thing to get is the drones.
So they could take pictures of your
neighbors? This is like the best time to be a kid. Yeah.
Yeah.
Air guns and drones. It's all heavy armaments.
What's the air gun thing?
Well, I mean, you get, you know, just the advanced iterations of BB guns.
Mm-hmm. But I think a 9-year-old... It used to be when America was America.
That's
9-year-old
right.
was a 20-gauge shotgun.
Well, Christmas Story ruined some of that, but you know, the more stout of heart will weaponize their children at a young age.
Fragile. When he gets the box.
Fragile. The oh yeah.
The leg lamp. Yeah. I just saw a recipe how to make leg lamp cookies. I might try to do that.
What's
a little cookie
in it?
With a Reese's peanut butter cup on top, so it looks like the leg lamp. Ah. But then you've got to get that fishnet stocking on the cookie. That's tricky.
That's my favorite part.
Yeah.
Is it licorice?
That would go nicely with my Hungry Man dinner that I'll be having for Christmas alone in my well-appointed condo. So I'd love
you
a
and
cookie
Jeeves.
Or two.
You and Jeeves.
Hungry Man
dinner is served.
My Salisbury steak and green peas.
And he's watching like what old Vinnie Pazienza fights?
Yeah,
like,
oh,
right, something. Right?
Movie out about Paz.
Yeah, right.
Tasmanian Devil.
Isn't that the one that got his neck broken? Isn't
yeah.
that what the movie's
yeah.
about?
Miles Teller plays Pazienza, right? I haven't seen it, but Miles Teller plays Pazienza.
I don't
Pazienza.
Like boxing movies. The best one was Champion with Kirk Douglas because it involved like...
Not Million Dollar Baby, no.
Raging Bull?
Million Dollar Baby.
Can't watch Raging Bull. That's a good Christmas movie, though, for the family.
It is.
Like when the brother beats the hell out of the other brother. I only saw that
it
once.
Sounds right up my alley.
Yeah.
With the movies that I show my kids.
Oh, my God.
You know what she talked about last week, what she put
so
on for
busted.
The kids?
What's that?
Cujo.
What's wrong with that? Stephen King.
For the children?
Yeah, what?
I sat and watched it with them.
Oh,
it's really
Grand
well
Theft Auto
done.
Is too much.
It's about no.
Yeah.
That's
The Division is awesome. I'm checking it out now. I'm trying it out to see if it's appropriate for
okay.
my
well, that's
10-year-old nephew.
It's a kind of a cautionary tale about not taking care of the dog we get you. So, you know, that's what happens if you don't pick up
I've
after the dog.
I've tried that, but our dog is a little white fluffy dog that you know, but they understood that the dog got rabies. I mean, so you have to take care of the dog.
Have you seen Don't Breathe yet?
No.
There's a good dog in Don't Breathe. There's kind of a Cujo.
Is that the losers attack some guy who's a blind special forces, blind swordsman?
Blind Iraq war veteran in bombed out Detroit, and he's got a cash settlement because his daughter was killed in a car accident, so they're going to rob him. That was a mistake.
In the night. Wow. It's good.
Like The Hitcher when they pick up. No,
Girl at a Train was
you
good.
Should Don't Breathe. You should that put the kids. Don't breathe.
Okay,
the
great.
Kids. They won't wake up till this time next year or go to sleep. I should say.
I still defend things. My decision on Cujo.
What about
Stand
other Christmas
by.
Movies?
Jaws? I don't know.
Die Hard.
You
Die
keep
hard.
Trying to get me in the Christmas spirit, but
Bad
it's not going to help. Right.
I hate Bad Santa.
I haven't seen the sequel.
It's awful.
Looks bad. Yeah.
The whole idea, just the headline Bad Santa is typical. Hollywood leftist propaganda, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah,
you know,
I've never seen it.
You know, St. Nicholas has particular relevance
he
to
was
Chicago.
Greek. Yeah.
St. Nicholas, December 6th, this is a feast day, and he was the patron saint of repentant thieves.
And
so we should pray to St. Nicholas to watch over the Chicago political class.
And he gave gifts to young ladies who did not have the money for a dowry.
Oh.
That's where the gifts come from.
And my mom always gave me an envelope with like $10 in it for St. Nicholas.
And my
These
mom.
Are lovely stories, gentlemen.
That is. That's my Christmas
there it
memory.
Is, we did.
How about it? Yeah.
$10 for. And then you could give it to the church or what?
No, I keep it for myself. What are you talking
Baseball
about?
Cards.
The gift.
What did you buy with that huge sum?
You
Besides
know,
like the penny candy with the dots.
Up until I was 38, I would go to the popcorn shop in downtown Wheaton and buy Swedish fish with it. And then I decided to. Put it into an IRA, of course, because I wanted to be responsible mm-hmm. and plan for my retirement.
You know what I bought with my allowance money? I bought the Sunday Rockford Register Star because I loved the comics and Garfield in particular. And I cut out my favorite comics and put them in a little drawer that I kept for probably 20 years.
Garfield was funny to you?
Mm-hmm.
That's sad.
Yeah.
Here's when I knew newspapers were in trouble.
There's nothing about that story that isn't sad.
I asked my kids, Garfield, right? I asked
Rockford.
My kids. Oh, you know what, though? There, Rockford is misunderstood. Rockford is misunderstood. They have one of the best breakfast places in the world.
Stockholm Inn.
Stockholm Inn.
Mm-hmm. I thought you were going to say tilted kilt.
That's not
They don't
me.
Do breakfast.
Stockholm Inn?
So you've heard.
You know,
Stockholm Syndrome?
I have to tell
a very quick, what's it called? Stockholm Syndrome?
To Stockholm Inn. When my son was about 3, he and my husband went shopping. They were gone all day, and they came back, and they had had lunch. And I said, "Where did you eat lunch?" And Colin, who's 3, said, "I don't know, but there were lots of belly buttons." Tilted yeah. Kilt.
They took Dad to Tilted Kilt. That was nice of them, mm-hmm. the kids.
I don't know, but there's lots of belly buttons.
My boys wanted to go to Hooters forever, and now that they're of the age where they can go, they go. And I said, "So what was it like, Hooters?" He said, "Dad, it's a bunch of moms in shorts."
Hey, now.
Hey. Wow. Right?
Yeah.
They're ruthless at that age.
One of my neighbors on, real quick, sorry, no, we're wrapping up. On Halloween, we were passing each other. We were walking with our kids, and I said, "What's Mary, where's your costume? What are you?" And she just deadpanned, looked at me. She goes, "Hot mom." I said, "Yeah, that's right.
That's
that was
awesome,
our costume.
Mary.
Or hot mom."
Did she have the shirt tied like at the...
No, we were just in our regular
that's
garb.
Another, Duke that's thing? Another holiday movie, Bad Moms.
Oh, I haven't seen that yet either.
I don't think there's any good holiday movie because I can't stand that It's a Wonderful Life.
Die
I
Hard.
I just can't.
Die Hard's yeah. a good holiday movie.
Die Hard, no.
What?
It's I don't know.
Place at
I mean, there's a tree.
The greatest story ever told, but then it's the crucifixion.
Miracle on 34th Street.
That sounds like the newspapers of today, where you can have the entire discussion about presents and not one about why there's gifts in the first place. But what can I say? Everybody's a heretic. What can I do? I can't.
You can only do what you can do.
Dan Proft once again holds up his Dan Proftian wall that we cannot penetrate.
Built with a sarcasm mortar.
Yes.
Definitely. Ooh. Right?
See? What a rhetorical flourish.
Thank you.
Christian McQuarrie, our spiritual sister. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
I'm not going to thank Dan. And Jeff Carlin, who didn't make the pie again. Once again, Jeff.
I'm a disappointment.
No pie.
Sad song, say so much, Jeff.
Talk to you guys again for another edition of the Chicago Way. Thanks for being here.